Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chana Meira, and today I'll be studying Parshat Miketz. This Parsha has four prakim, from Mem Aleph to Mem Dalet, and it has 146 psukim. So we're carrying on with our dramatic story of Yosef in Mitzrayim. We're following his swift rise to power and his reunion with his brothers. First we're going to go through the seven aliyahs, and then we're going to analyze Yosef's interactions with his brothers. In the first aliyah, Paro has a disturbing dream. Seven fat, beautiful cows emerge from the Nile, and they're grazing by the side. When seven scrawny cows leave the Nile, they eat the seven fat cows, and they remain as scrawny as they were before, which is the first historical and biblical evidence of a Zempic. He has a similar dream with stalks of wheat, and he wakes up very troubled. He calls all his advisors, but no one can interpret the dream. Eventually, the butler comes to Paro and he remembers that 2 years ago he was in jail and he had a disturbing dream and the baker had a disturbing dream and there was this person who could interpret their dreams perfectly. But even as he's recounting about Yosef to Paro, he still manages to slip in a lot of negative innuendo. He's a young boy, he's a Hebrew because the Egyptians hated the Hebrews. But even so, Paro is prepared to take a chance. He summons Yosef from jail, and Chazal tell us that the day that Yosef was relieved from jail was actually Rosh Hashanah. Yosef is rushed out of jail, washed, shaved, his clothing are changed, which again is that motif from last week of the changing of the clothes, and he's brought to Paro. In the second aliyah, Yosef tells Paro that Hashem is the one who interprets dreams, and we see how Yosef has matured, because the beginning, middle, and the end of Yosef's speech to Paro, he keeps mentioning Hashem. So as Paro tells the dream, Yosef keeps correcting him when Paro makes some mistakes, and he says to him, look, your two dreams are actually one dream that's been repeated for emphasis and for urgency. Very soon they're going to be 7 years of plenty like you've never had in Egypt, but after that you're going to have 7 years of famine. And then Yosef adds some advice. He says, choose a wise person who will be in charge of collecting taxes during the years of plenty, storing grain for when there will be the famine, and then when the famine comes, you will have enough provisions for your people and you won't starve. In the third aliyah, Paro appoints Yosef for this job and he makes him his second in command. He gives him his signet ring as a sign of power. He dresses him in fine linen garments, again, that clothing theme, and he's given a new name, Tzafnat Paneach. Paro also marries him to Osnat, the daughter of Potiphar, for two reasons. First of all, Yosef was accused of assaulting Potiphar's wife. So if he marries Potiphar's daughter, this is proof that he is innocent. But also the Midrash tells us that this girl, Osnat, was not actually Potiphar's biological daughter. She was adopted. She was Dinah's daughter from Shechem, who Yaakov had sent away with an amulet around her neck. Whoever takes in this girl should know she is from the house of Yaakov. So essentially, Yosef was marrying the only Jewish person in the whole land of Egypt. Yosef's words become true, and Egypt has 7 years of plenty. During this time, Yosef collects grain and he stores it in storage houses till he has enough grain like the sand of the sea. During this time, he has two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. In the fourth aliyah, the 7 years of plenty end and the 7 years of hunger begin. The entire world turns to Yosef to buy food. Back in Canaan, Yaakov tells his sons, Lama titra'u, why should we look different from everybody else? Everyone else is going to Egypt. We should also go to Egypt. However, he refuses to let Binyamin go down with his brothers. In Egypt, the brothers are brought before Yosef, and he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And Yosef accuses them of spies. When they try to defend themselves, they say, no, we're innocent people from Canaan. We left our old father together with our youngest brother. So Yosef says, oh, very easy to prove that you're not spies. All you have to do is bring me down your youngest brother. And they said, absolutely not, we can't do it, it'll kill our father. So Yosef throws the brothers in jail for 3 days to think about it. In the fifth aliyah, Yosef agrees to release the brothers and allow them to bring home provisions on condition that they bring back Benjamin. And to make sure that they actually come back, he takes Shimon as a prisoner and he holds him hostage till they return. The brothers finally wonder if all the suffering is coming to them because they ignored Yosef's cries when they sold him. On the way home, they discover that the money that they had paid for the grain had been put back in their sacks, and now they're very afraid. They tell Yaakov everything that happened, but predictably Yaakov refuses to send down Benjamin. Reuven even offers that if anything happens to Benjamin, Yaakov can kill his two sons, and Yaakov turns down that offer. So the brothers decide to wait until they run out of food. Eventually, the family desperately needs to go back to Egypt. They're starving. And Yehuda is able to convince Yaakov to send down Benjamin. Yaakov arranges gifts for them to give to the leader of Egypt. And ironically, the gifts were the same items that were in the caravan that accompanied Yosef when he went down with the Ishmaelim. So the brothers take the returned money, more money for food, the gifts, and Benjamin, and they make their way down to Egypt. In the sixth aliyah, the brothers arrive in Egypt, and Yosef immediately takes notes of Benjamin. And Yosef instructs the supervisor to prepare a feast and invites all the brothers to join him that afternoon. The supervisor calms the brothers down. He says, "Don't worry, I remember receiving your money. God must have given you back your money." And when they come to Yosef's palace and he sees Benjamin surrounded by his brothers, he actually has to leave the room to compose himself. When he comes back in, they all bow down low before him. He asks after their well-being and after their father, and they give him all the gifts. In the seventh aliyah, he seats the brothers according to age order, and they're shocked that he knows their ages, but he seats Benjamin with him, and he gives them all gifts, but he gives Benjamin 5 gifts. The next morning, the brothers prepare to leave for Canaan, and Yosef instructs his steward to fill their bags with food, but he also hides his personal silver goblet in Benjamin's sack. After they leave, Yosef sends his steward to chase them and accuse them of stealing the cup. And they all swear their innocence and declare whoever has the cup will be killed and the rest of them will be slaves. So the steward searches their bags, starting with the oldest, ending with Benjamin, and surprise, they found the cup. So they all fall on the ground, tear their clothes, and Yehuda tells Yosef that Hashem is punishing them for prior sins, but they definitely didn't steal the cup. Yosef, however, says, "Don't worry, just leave Benjamin with me and you can all go back home to your father." And this is where the story ends, to be resumed next week. Now, if we're going to look deeper into the story, we need to appreciate that the Parshiyot, Vayeshev, Miketz, and Vayigash are actually one unit, the whole Yosef narrative. And if we look at it as one unit, we'll notice a pattern. The beginning, we see the Toldot Yaakov, the family of Yaakov, built on the fault lines of the animosity between the children of Leah and the children of Rachel, which is carried on to the next generation. We see the rift as the brothers sell Yosef. Then Yosef has to work on his own personal faults that led up to the rift. The brothers have to work on their personal faults that led up to the rift. And only when they've each individually worked on their faults, they're at the end of Vayigash, they can reunite as a family. So that's the overarching theme of these stories. Now, a question we can ask is, once Yosef becomes appointed as the second in command and he has unlimited money and unlimited power, why did he never contact his father? Why didn't he reach out to him and say, "Hey, I'm in Egypt and I'm so powerful and I can help you"? Why does he wait? Why all the subterfuge? So if you think about it, what would he have achieved if he would have contacted Yaakov? Yaakov at this point didn't realize that the brothers had sold Yosef. He thought that Yosef had died. The brothers, at this point, did not feel any regret for selling Yosef. And if they would have seen Yosef again, the brothers would have probably tried to get rid of him a second time. So Yosef's goal in this whole story of Parshat Miketz is to try to get the brothers to understand what they did wrong, get them to feel a sense of guilt, and get them to re-accept him. Only once they are reunited can they let Yaakov in on the secret. But if they would do that before, it wouldn't achieve anything. So the Abarbanel actually uses this approach, and I'm very grateful to Rabbi Alex Israel, who explained it in his shiurim. But the Abarbanel argues that the whole parasha is a special step-by-step program designed by Yosef to get the brothers to realize what they had done wrong. So if you look at the actual words of the psukim, there's a lot of hints that this is Yosef's intention. When the brothers first go down to Egypt, the text points out the setup. It says, "Vayudu achei Yosef asara," and the 10 brothers of Yosef went down, "lishbor bor mimitzrayim," to get grain from Egypt. But look at the play on words. Bor is also a pit. That's what they threw Yosef into. So the 10 brothers who originally threw Yosef into the pit are now going down to Egypt to try to get food. In contrast, "ve'et Benjamin achi Yosef," but Benjamin, the genuine brother of Yosef, "lo shalach Yaakov," Yaakov didn't send. So this is the setup. The 10 original brothers who threw Yosef into the pit, will they treat Benjamin, who is the genuine brother of Yosef, who is the other son of Rachel, will they treat him as a brother? Will they see him as one of their own? Will they defend him when he gets them into trouble? This will be the litmus test of whether or not they've done proper tshuva. The next clue in the text that there's mida keneged mida, measure for measure, actions going on here. Vayar Yosef et Achav. Yosef saw his brothers. Vayakireim, and he recognized them. And a little bit later it says, Vayaker Yosef et Achav. Yosef recognized his brothers. Vahem lo hikiruhu, but they didn't recognize him. When last did we have the shosh of hikir? When they dipped the coat in blood and they said to Yaakov, Hakerna, recognize, is this your son's coat? So now we have the setup. We understand what the test is. Let's see if the brothers get the lesson. So step one, when the brothers are being arrested for being spies, they say to each other, Vayomer isha lachiv, that one said to the other, Aval ashamim anachnu, we are guilty, alacheinu, for our brother, ashero inu tzorat nafsha, we saw the suffering of his soul, behitchanenu aleinu, when he pleaded with us, v'lo shamanu, and we didn't listen to him, al kein ba aleinu hatzarazot, this is why this suffering is happening. Now it's really interesting because last week's parasha in Vayesha, when it described the throwing of Yosef into the pit, it doesn't say anywhere that he pleaded with them, because the story was told from the perspective of the brothers. When the brothers threw Yosef in the pit, they had absolute confidence that they were doing the right thing. They felt zero guilt, so they couldn't hear his crying. But now, for the first time, when they re-examined their motives and they realized maybe they were doing the wrong thing, it was if 22 years later they took the earplugs out of their ears and they could actually hear his cries from the past and realized what they had done was wrong. They're acknowledging Yosef's pain. This is step one. The second step in their tshuva program is when Yosef returns their money to them. Where else was their money, kesef, involved? Well, they sold Yosef for 20 pieces of silver. And now they open up their bag. Vayomer el achiv, and one brother said to his other brother, Hushev kasbi, my money's been returned. And each of them realized that their money had been returned. It was more than that. They finally realized that the money they had earned all those years ago was ill-gotten gains. So now they realize they should have had compassion of Yosef. Selling him was wrong. But how do they fix it? What could they possibly do? So essentially what Yosef is trying to engineer is that the sons of Leah have to take responsibility for the son of Rachel and treat him as a brother and protect him, and that will prove tshuva. Because true tshuva is when you put in the same situation where you messed up originally, and this time you do it right. So the first son of Leah, Reuven, is the one who says to the brothers, Hello, amarti alachem, didn't I tell you? Leimor saying, Al techetu beyeled, don't sin against the child. Velo shamatem, and you didn't listen to me. He said, I told you we shouldn't have done it. That's Reuven's contribution. His second contribution is trying to stand up as a guarantor for Binyamin, even though Yaakov doesn't listen to him. Shimon and Levi are the ones, when it says, Vayomer isha lachiv, that's always talking about Shimon and Levi. This is why Yosef separates them. He arrests Shimon, and Levi's the one who finds the money in his sack. Yehuda is the one who steps up and convinces Yaakov that he will be responsible for Binyamin. And in the next week's parasha, in Vayigash, he's going to be the one who stands up to Yosef. So we see this happening, as I mentioned in the overview. When they send Binyamin down, Yaakov says, Kuchu mizimrat ha'aretz, take from the best of the land, ma'at tzari o ma'at devash, nachot velot. Take some balm, some honey, some gum, some laudanum. I have no idea what laudanum, but I think it's something good. And sure enough, in Yosef's journey, in the parasha before, when he was taken in the caravan, it says that the Yishmaelim were carrying nechot utzri velot, gum, balm, and laudanum. So Binyamin is reenacting Yosef's journey down. However, even as Yosef is recreating, it's very painful for him. We see many times he has to go to the side and cry because he's so overwhelmed with the memories. But he's also overwhelmed when he sees his brother Binyamin, and it says, Vayisayna vayarek Binyamin, Achiv ben Imo, as the son of Rachel, and he is surrounded by the other brothers. This is what moves him to tears. When he sees that the sons of Leah are able to protectively surround the son of Rachel, he realizes they're doing tshuva, and it makes him very emotional. He does two more things to set them up for the final test. First, he gives Binyamin more gifts than the rest of his brothers, because originally the brothers were jealous when he received his distinctive coat. So now he wants to restoke the jealousy. Will they be jealous when the king favors Binyamin more? But the ultimate test is when he plants his goblet inside Binyamin's sack. And why does he do that, of all the things? So this goblet was a special goblet. He used to pretend to divine the future or divine unknown facts with this goblet. Many years before, Rachel had stolen the triphim from Lavan because she didn't want Lavan to divine and tell through magic where their whereabouts were. And Yaakov had said, whoever has stolen this item from which you do divination, he will die. And that's what happened to Rachel. So to the brothers, they're going to say, oh, whoever's stolen your goblet, he will die. But now they're going to have to protect Binyamin. If they can defend Binyamin, even though Binyamin got them into so much trouble, then Yosef will know they've done complete tshuva. And the truth is, we don't yet know the end of the story because it carries on into the next parasha. We'll finish it off next week. I think there is a lesson that we can get from this parasha that we can apply to our everyday lives. The brothers in this week's parasha display unbelievable strength of character. When things go wrong, instead of blaming the situation, blaming the Egyptians, making it out as if it was just bad luck, they actually stop and they look in the mirror. And they're able to make a connection between events that they've done in the past and what's happening now. And they show great empathy. Once they themselves are going through the experience that Yosef went, they're able to maybe consider that they were wrong. And that's one of the hardest things for human beings. When we have righteous anger, when we are convinced that what we're doing is the right thing, it's very hard to reflect once things don't go our way and say, maybe we didn't get that as right as we thought. And this is actually what starts the healing process between the brothers and Yosef, once they're able to realize maybe the situation as we saw it wasn't correct. Maybe it was different for Yosef, and maybe we didn't do the right thing. The second thing that we learn from the brothers is true teshuva is when you're put in the same situation and this time you do it different. So if you're caught in a rut and you find yourself always landing up in the same situation, you're always rushing after candle lighting, trying to make it before Shkia, or you always overcommit and you're overwhelmed with too many things to do, you keep having the same challenges. Maybe it's a time to realize that Hashem is giving you an opportunity to fix it. Have a look, why did I get into this situation? Is it something that I could have done different? Can I embrace this opportunity to do it correctly this time and show Hashem that I've done real tshuva? So next week we're going to reach the finale of the story when the brothers finally reunite and Yaakov is able to come down to Egypt. In the meantime, have a wonderful week.